Thank you for joining us today on The Sword and Trowel. Today, Graham and I get to welcome into this episode William Wolfe, who is the founder and the executive director of the Center for Baptist Leadership. William founded this organization several months ago in order to help try to call attention to some of the difficulties in the Southern Baptist Convention primarily, and also to rally churches and pastors to stop and consider the SBC and how things need to be addressed in order to bring us back to greater biblical alignment. If you're a Southern Baptist, you'll be particularly interested in this episode. If you're not, you should also be interested because the Southern Baptist Convention is the largest Protestant denomination in North America, and as it goes, it impacts other evangelical churches and institutions. Welcome to The Sword and Trowel. The Sword and Trowel is a podcast of Founders Ministries, and Founders exists for the recovery of the gospel and the reformation of local churches. I'm Tom Askell.
And I'm Graham Gundon.
We're delighted to have you join us today, and we welcome into this episode William Wolfe, who's coming to us from North Carolina. And William, welcome to The Sword and Trowel.
Thanks for having me back, guys. Good to be here with you.
Yeah, we're glad to have you back on here. And I think last time you were living in Kentucky when we had you. Now you're in North Carolina. You've been there for about a year or so. Is that right?
Yeah, coming up on it, a little less.
Yeah, well, thank you for making time to be with us today. We want to talk to you about some of the activities you've been involved in over the last 6 months, 9 months or so. You are the founder of a new organization called the Center for Baptist Leadership and the executive director of that organization. So tell us about the genesis of it. I mean, why did you start this at this time, and what are you doing with that center?
Yeah, well, I ask myself every day why I am trying to move the Sisyphean rock up the hill of the Southern Baptist Convention. And I lay my head on the pillow and remind myself that, you know, this matters, Lord willing, for the future of gospel work, both in our nation and around the world. The Southern Baptist Convention, as you guys know, is a huge denomination, largest Protestant denomination in the United States of America. And for 160 years, the Lord has blessed that denomination's effort in planting churches and taking the gospel of Jesus Christ to the ends of the earth. And that gospel message, you know, teaching everybody to obey all that Christ has commanded, it must remain pure and unadulterated, or this massive church planting, gospel sending organization could be subverted and corrupted, and we could see false gospels and false churches planted around the world. And so the health of the Southern Baptist Convention matters. And I don't think that the health of the Southern Baptist Convention is where it needs to be right now, according to biblical standards. And so the Center for Baptist Leadership is a new effort alongside of other many wonderful brothers out there who've been fighting for reform in the Southern Baptist Convention, like yourself and Baptist Network. And now Christ Overall is getting involved in this fight to try to help bring the Southern Baptist Convention back to biblical standards, mission fidelity, and confessional faithfulness for the Southern Baptist Convention. The difference with Center for Baptist Leadership than perhaps some others is we are trying to really be a think tank for the denomination. We want to publish things that are critical to the issues facing us as a denomination internally. We want to help equip pastors and lay members and institutional leaders to engage the threats coming from the outside world, pressing in on the Southern Baptist Convention, and then to equip Baptists to be a better voice in the public square.
Well, that's wonderful. So why focus on leadership? I mean, Center for Baptist Leadership. It could have been Center for Baptist Renewal, Center for Baptist Health, but leadership. I mean, what's behind that?
Sure. Well, Center for Baptist Renewal is taken. There are some guys out there doing an effort there, which I think in large measure, at least the thesis of that effort is good, is trying to recover sort of the theological importance of the Reformation and Baptist distinctives. That's important. But at the center of so many of the issues plaguing the Southern Baptist Convention is, I think, a lack of biblical, bold, and courageous leadership. Because, Amen. You know, people say, well, look, where all the liberals have left. And first of all, I don't think that's entirely true. But the problem is we have men who on paper say that they're committed to the same things you and I are committed to. But when they go and they lead in a different direction. And so whether that is fundamentally that they're not committed to the principles they've signed their name to, or they're being, you know, cowardly in the eyes of the world, I think the root there is a failure of leadership. And so we want to equip Baptists, again, pastors, lay members, and institutional leaders to forthrightly and to plainly defend our historical Baptist commitments and our theological commitments, even as they apply to cultural challenges of the day. And so we want to see a new generation of Baptist leaders really drive the Southern Baptist Convention back to a place of prominence in American evangelicalism for the good of the entire country. I think that we are, if we're leading from behind, that's the best we're doing. And at worst, we're often leading in the opposite direction, aka in the direction the world is trying to take the church.
So, you know, thinking about leadership within the Southern Baptist Convention, and as you say, failures of leadership within the convention, I don't want to necessarily put you on the spot, but I mean, just could you give us examples of the ways in which this has kind of played out in the convention, even over the past, you know, 10 years and more recently?
Yeah, well, I'll go back just a little bit further. I think after the triumph of the conservative resurgence, we entered into what could be called a peacetime in the Southern Baptist Convention to a degree. And we were still operating, to use Aaron Wren's framework, in the neutral world in American life of pertaining to religion and Christianity. And so maybe from 2000 to 2010, 2012, we weren't, I think, actively preparing our churches and our convention to stand against the coming onslaughts of corruption that we would see as we moved into the negative world. And so I don't think that that class of leaders really equipped the SBC to be prepared to stand. And so then once those onslaughts came, critical race theory, Obergefell, transgenderism, you know, a DEI, all this stuff, the sort of winsome style class of leaders started crumpling in the face of that. And I think one really pertinent example is the handoff from sort of the old school non-Calvinists who were leading the Southern Baptist Convention to the young, restless, and reform guys as embodied by J.D. Greer. And I've thought about this quite a bit, and I think that I really don't like that adjective restless. That's a subversive adjective. We should have, if anything, they should have been young, righteous, and reformed. That would have been better. But during J.D. Greer's tenure as president of the Southern Baptist Convention, I think he really used DEI standards to make appointments to trustee positions, which that's one of the most critical things that a president does. He appointed people based on their gender or their biological sex as opposed to their commitment to scriptural truth. And then he led us through some pretty contentious periods in the public life, particularly the onslaught of the allegations of there being, you know, widespread abuse in the Southern Baptist Convention by a Me Too rhetoric of believe all women, throwing due process and biblical standards of justice out the window. And then right on the heels of that, we had, you know, during his tenure, we had Resolution number 9. Then we got Ed Litton, who was obviously a plagiarist. He doesn't respect God's word in the pulpit. And then we've had Bart Barber for the last 2 years. So I think these 6 years in particular have been a marked and rapid decline of leadership in the Southern Baptist Convention, really all under the mantra of the world is watching, as if that could be the most important thing, as opposed to what does the Bible say? And is God watching? And we know the answer is yes.
Yeah, it's interesting, particularly, I think it was from 2019 on, every convention I've been to, from the platform, you hear that phrase over and over, brothers and sisters, the world is watching. And as if that's what we're supposed to be concerned about. Like, and yes, certainly we want people to hear our testimony of the truth. We want people to see our good works and praise our Father in heaven. But the point is that they would praise our Father in heaven, not that they would like us, so that they would want to listen to us.
Yeah, we have certainly had that kind of attitude foisted upon us time and again from the platform.
Thank you for joining us today for this conversation on the sword and the trowel. Tom and I wanted to invite you to come and join us down here in sunny Southwest Florida, January 23rd through the 25th for our National Founders Conference. This next theme for next year is going to be Revive Us, O Lord, a whole conference on revival. Dr. Tom Askell, Dr. Bodhi Bakum, Jeff Johnson, Dr. Joel Beakey will be some of the speakers that will be there with us. It's going to be a wonderful time, as the Founders National Conferences always are, of fellowship and growing in the Word. So go to founders.org, look at some of the information on the conference. We'd love to have you here. And if you'd like more information, you can see some of that at the end of this podcast.
So, William, tell us about, for a Southern Baptist who wasn't around or wasn't paying attention during all that, maybe they've come into the convention after this, or their churches just weren't heavily involved, and we've been living off of the largesse of the conservative resurgence for the last decade or 15 years or so. They hear cries of, we've got to change the direction. We need to wake up and realize we're going down a bad path. We've got leaders who have failed. And they're saying, what are you talking about? You know, these are good guys. These are guys that have signed all the confessions, and these are men that were put in place through the conservative resurgence. What are some examples today of problems in the SBC that should rise to the level of motivating us to get to the next annual convention and to vote in a way that will go contrary to what the platform has been driving this convention to do over the last, say, 8 to 10 years?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tom. And I'd like to start by making a broader point, which is, I don't know why anybody would want to deny the reality of drift in a theological denomination or a Christian organization, because that is inevitable. The world is going to be pulling us along with it, with whatever the passing fads are or the worldly ideologies that seek to subvert the Christian faith. This is our duty as Christians in every generation. Every generation must defend the faith once for all delivered for the saints. And so I think to try to constantly say there's no threat, there's no drift, is really sort of a head in the sand posture. Instead, we should be watchmen on the walls looking for the threats and seeking to identify them. And so that, just the reality of the threat of compromise and drift, will be ever present with us. And so to pretend like it doesn't exist, again, I think is short-sighted and is anachronistic as opposed to all the other believers who have functioned since Christ was resurrected. And so that exists. And then some specific examples of it, I think, would be, again, very clearly in how we have allowed worldly ideologies and sort of cultural norms to set how we engage with issues that oppress us in our day. And in Wellam's recent book on systematic theology, in his introduction, he talks about how even critics of evangelicalism, positive and negative, David Wells, David Gushee, have pointed out how we've sort of lost the objective discipline of theology and are really sort of doing sociology as theology instead. Mm-hmm. And we see this very clearly in the Southern Baptist Convention when we try to take something like critical race theory and say it could be an analytical tool as opposed to examining it through the lens of scripture. Another really good example would be how the Southern Baptist Convention has approached issues of LGBTQIA+, or whatever acronym you want to use. I think that we've accepted a framing from the world that you can be a quote-unquote gay Christian. And I think Jaron Moore has done some great work recently, and we'll be publishing him soon at Center for Baptist Leadership, countering that. So on the critical race theory, on the homosexual compromise, saying we could use transgender pronouns as an act of pronoun hospitality, those have been established. But more recent ones would include how we saw a few weeks back, the Tennessee Baptist Association put out a hiring request, and in it they include a DEI language saying preference would be given to people who were minorities. Or even just over Easter weekend, we saw how the president declared a transgender day of visibility, and the ethics and public policy arm of the Southern Baptist Convention, the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, was absolutely silent. Mm-hmm. Many Southern Baptist leaders did speak out. Center for Baptist Leadership issued a statement, but I wonder why we even have an organization dedicated to ethics in the Southern Baptist Convention if they can't find their voice to speak about transgender compromise on Easter weekend.
Well, that's a great point. And the ERLC, I think, is long lived past its best use by date and should be defunded. I tried to defund it from the floor of the convention several years ago and was ruled out of motion, but hopefully some brave soul will do that again in Indianapolis and we can overrule the chair if the chair says that that motion is out of order and just simply take them out of the budget, which can be done because the budget is adopted one of the first things at the convention. So the first day, first morning session, and whenever that budget is proposed, study it before it gets to that point and then just make a motion that the line item that funds the ERLC be removed and that it be put to zero. And if we do that, then they won't at least be getting Southern Baptist money. We all know they have plenty more money coming in from other sources that will more than keep them afloat, but at least it won't be the cooperative program dollars that are paying their salaries. So, William, what are your hopes for the upcoming Southern Baptist Convention? So we're going to meet, as we do every year, annually, and we conduct business for 2 days. This year it'll be in Indianapolis in June. So what are your hopes for what might happen in Indianapolis?
Yeah, well, I was saving one major example of the drift in the Southern Baptist Convention, or the downgrade, if you want to use that language from Spurgeon's day, and that is egalitarianism. That probably is one of the most prominent examples of how Southern Baptists have lost their confessional roots and their biblical commitments with the proliferation of women pastors. And how that pertains to this convention is that we have a vote on an amendment to try to address this, which is an appropriate measure to use. It's being offered by Mike Law from Arlington, Virginia. And his amendment takes language that we have in the Baptist Faith and Message and reinserts it into Article 3 of our Constitution, clarifying that to be in friendly cooperation with a Southern Baptist Convention, a church must only appoint, employ, or affirm men to be pastors as qualified by Scripture. That passed for the first time, one of two votes in New Orleans last year. We have to pass it again in Indianapolis in order to ratify it. I think that might be the most important vote we take as Southern Baptists this year in Indianapolis. And so if you care about helping stop denominational decline on this point, which I have to add, is really a bellwether. It's the first barrier to fall before a denomination almost begins to move headlong into total liberalism. This is what happened to the mainlines as well. And so if for nothing else, come to Indianapolis to help ratify the Mike Law Amendment. That's one of the biggest votes on the table. There are certainly others if you want to get into them.
So why, first of all, are there any Southern Baptists of prominence, any Southern Baptist leaders that are opposed to the Mike Law Amendment? And why would any right-thinking Southern Baptist who believes the Bible be opposed to the Law Amendment?
Yeah, unfortunately, the Law Amendment has faced quite an uphill battle from the moment of its inception. Mike Law tells his story in an article published at American Reformer by Megan Basham called Mr. Smith Goes to the Convention. And he talks about the runaround he got from the Credentials Committee as he sought to get clarity on whether or not Southern Baptist Church can have female pastors. We had the chair of our Credentials Committee stand up in Anaheim and say that she wasn't sure what we meant by the word pastor, which I think that should be a wake-up call for everybody in the Southern Baptist Convention. And really, this is some interesting Southern Baptist history here, is that there's been a push before the Law Amendment to try to make some changes to the boundaries of cooperation within the Southern Baptist Convention, particularly over who can be a pastor, or the use of the terminology of pastor for women or not. And during that period in Anaheim when this was being discussed, because Saddleback at that point had been referred to the Credentials Committee and was under consideration for disfellowship, former president of Southwestern, Adam Greenway, went to the microphone and he said, the issue here really isn't how we define pastor, it's how we define cooperation. Then he made a motion to try to take things in that direction. And Moeller actually came down to another microphone and opposed him. And that initial Greenway motion in Anaheim was defeated. But you have to recognize the intrinsical link here between cooperation and male-only pastors. Because then, you know, a year later, after we got the Mike Law Amendment, then we got this cooperation group, which is really just the revived Greenway motion. And so this is all playing into it. And back to your initial answer of a question of whether or not there's prominent voices opposing it. Well, there are, including, I would say, those five ex-presidents who went down there, Greer, Lytton, Merritt, Gaines, and I can't remember who the fifth one was, to initiate this cooperation group. That was an act of opposition to the law amendment. It really was. There's no other right way to understand that. Shortly after the convention last year, J.D. Greer published a long blog post essentially saying this is not the right way, this is not the path forward. Bart Barber, our current president, opposes the law amendment. When the executive committee allowed the law amendment to come to the floor for a vote in New Orleans, it gave it a recommendation of no to the messengers, which they roundly and loudly rejected. And so that opposition is still being mounted by the many men in leadership. I do know that there are those who support it in the Southern Baptist Convention, including Andrew Walker and Albert Moeller and Stephen Wellum and Jim Hamilton, the guys at Kenwood. And I do believe that Jason Allen at Midwestern supports it as well. And that kind of shows you there's a couple camps of leadership in the Southern Baptist Convention, but it's really up to the messengers. The messengers need to vote with their feet on the Bible and with their ears plugged to the peace, peace cries of our leadership and get this thing done.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of The Sword and the Trowel today. If this episode has been helpful to you, or if any of the resources that Founders Ministries puts out is helpful, and there are many resources if you go to founders.org, we'd love for you to come alongside us to support us in our ministry and in our endeavors. The Lord's been kind to us and faithful to us and in allowing us to do so many things, from our publishing to our podcasts to our theological journals and conferences and many other things. But if the Lord is calling you to come alongside us and support us in this, we'd ask you to go to founders.org and you can go to the Give tab there and support us financially. We thank the Lord for your gift. Yeah, it is so clear to me, just looking at the convention and what you've just related, that there really is a crisis of leadership in the convention. People who have taken on the mantle and have either led us down the wrong path or have just not led us at all. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very excited about the work that you're doing at the Center for Baptist Leadership. What are some things? I know the center is new, but what are some things that you guys are hoping to accomplish here in the near future? Are you guys working on any projects?
Yeah, thanks, Graham. I'm really proud of the team so far, our contributing scholars, our advisory board members, and the resources that we've produced. I mean, we've already tackled the law amendment. We've tackled, why it's so important to come to Indianapolis. We've tackled financial transparency. That's another big thing. There's a push for financial transparency. And so we're going to continue to address these issues, with regularly published articles speaking to Baptist life. Some other things that we hope to accomplish in the long term is we would like to provide what we're going to call sort of white papers on issues in Southern Baptist life, deep dive academic and investigative reviews of how things are operating within the Southern Baptist Convention to really show people what our entities are doing. The ERLC is certainly one of the targets on our list for that. We hope to have a journal published, not just articles, but more academic journals over time. And all the people listening to this are going to love this. I hope that we can start sort of campus chapter clubs for future Baptist leaders on seminaries and Baptist colleges around the country so that we can begin cultivating this courageous leadership in the next generation as well. And so those are some of our future plans. We have a podcast coming out as well and a newsletter, hopefully, here too. Those are actually our next first projects. We really hope to get our first podcast episode out here shortly, and then a newsletter being delivered directly to subscribers, and we'll just keep building from there. There's so much work to be done.
Yeah, absolutely. I've heard that, and maybe this would be too long to get into, but I've heard that another veteran of the Trump administration, like yourself, is going to be at the Southern Baptist Convention here this this June.
Yeah, that's right. The last time he showed up, there was a protest and a walkout when Mike Pence, is who we're talking about, has been invited by the Ethics and Religious Commission to come and speak that Monday, I think it is, before the convention formally convenes on Tuesday. What do you think about that? Why is Pence suddenly welcomed with open arms when he was persona non grata back in 2018, I believe it was?
There was so much anger over his presence there in 2018.
And some of the same guys who were angry then are applauding him now.
Well, I think the only honest answer to that is, you know, the person and work of Donald Trump, right? And so that's the difference here. It's a great example, though, of the hypocrisy that exists within the Southern Baptist Convention by a current sort of class of the elite leaders. And it shows really, I think, the dissonance, the disconnect between the base of the Southern Baptist Convention and many of the men, again, in positions of authority and institutional power. In 2018, when Pence came, he was the sitting vice president. And I think outside of, again, just sort of a select few people in certain positions that have microphones and platforms and made a lot of noise, I bet the vast majority of Southern Baptists really didn't have a big issue with that. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not the most appropriate thing in the world, but it certainly is not a bad thing, at least in my mind, that a sitting vice president would want to show respect to a massive Christian denomination. What would you prefer instead? That the FBI was sort of posting up outside of the convention and harassing all of us on our way in? Because that's quite a likely scenario under the Biden administration, the way that things are going. And so so I didn't have a problem with it then, but I think it just shows now that they're willing to do it. It really comes down to Donald Trump and how Baptists have dealt with Donald Trump, I think, is really interesting and important. I'm an unapologetic supporter of Donald Trump, as I think most Southern Baptists are. Good people can disagree on that, but you should not be vilifying, you know, 80% of the denomination that you say you claim to represent when they support Donald Trump and you don't. And so I think they're happy to have Pence now because Pence has broken with Trump, which shows you that the principle at play here is not politicians being associated with the Southern Baptist Convention. The principle at play is, how do we respond to Donald Trump?
Mm-hmm. As my friend Mike Stone puts it, it's never about what in the SBC. It's always about who. And the fact that the who now is on the left side, well, okay, then that's acceptable. But before, the who was on the right side, and that just simply cannot be tolerated. So he has helped me to think through these things very simply and communicate them simply, that if you are thinking what, you know, these things are similar, how can they be treated so differently? You're missing the point in the SBC. In the SBC, it's always about who. So thank you, Mike Stone, for those little words of wisdom and counsel. It'll help us going forward. So, William, give your best pitch to those who are Southern Baptist church members who they care about things, but they've got their lives and they're just keeping their head down, trying to do the best they can in their jobs and their churches, serving the Lord. And they hear about this and they say, well, you know, should I go to Indianapolis? It's going to cost me time. I'm going to have to take off work and cost me money. So what is your best pitch as to why the salt of the earth church member of a Southern Baptist church should go to the expense and effort to get to Indianapolis to vote?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll try to be concise. I know that I can ramble on here, but I'll say this. I think that you should care about the Southern Baptist Convention as an act of honoring your father and mother and defending the gospel of Jesus Christ. And let me unpack those two. We've been gifted this great inheritance, this stewardship of the Southern Baptist Convention by previous generations. And now the responsibility is ours to defend it, to advance it, to protect it and secure it, and then pass it on to future generations. And you can only really do that if you make the time and effort to come to the annual convention, or if you work within your church to make it clear to your pastors and your elders that this is a priority for the church. You give your money to the Southern Baptist Convention. Right now, the Annie Armstrong Easter offering has been underway, and that money goes to NAM. Well, you have a fiduciary responsibility and a responsibility to God as well to see that that money is stewarded well. And so I would say that you want to honor the commitment of previous generations, and then you want to take action to defend the gospel of Jesus Christ. this is the most important thing. And really what's at play here is the gospel of salvation for all who repent and believe. And that's the gospel message that Baptists want to take to the world. But the gospel has implications too, for how we order our churches, for how we engage in the civic sphere, for how we disciple and train people. And we want that gospel to be the pure gospel of Christ and unadulterated by worldly ideology and compromise. And there's no greater, there's nothing greater out there we could give our time, our money, our effort, our energy to. Mark Divine, in an article for American Reformer, called on Southern Baptist churches and Southern Baptist members to take a missions trip to the annual convention. And I thought that was a great way to put it. He said, take a missions trip for the future of the Southern Baptist Convention, for future generations. But really, the point of that mission trip, again, is defending the gospel of Jesus Christ as articulated in the Southern Baptist Convention. Ask yourself what else you give money to, what else you give time to, and why wouldn't you give time, money, resources, travel to take a two-day trip to the heartland of America, Indianapolis, Indiana, and vote to defend male-only pastors, vote for financial transparency, vote for a conservative president, vote to defend what it means to cooperate as Southern Baptists going forward. There's, as a Christian in America, as a Southern Baptist in America, other than your life in your local church and, you know, other, of course, other important things, there are a few other extracurricular activities that could be more important than coming to the Southern Baptist Convention annual meeting this year.
Well said. Well said. Well, William, thank you so much for joining us today. We're grateful to have you and learn more about this new Center for Baptist Leadership. I'm delighted to be on the board of counselors for that. I forget exactly the title that I'm a part of with that, but I appreciate your efforts in trying to get things going in a right direction in the Southern Baptist Convention. And so if you are Southern Baptist, we encourage you to make plans to go to the convention. If you are a Southern Baptist pastor, check and see how many messengers your church is eligible for. You get at least two, and you probably get more than that. You can have up to 12. Get all of them that you can and go to Indianapolis and let's vote to do these very things that William has outlined for us. Thanks for joining us today on The Sword and the Trowel. We're grateful always to those who support Founders Ministries, our Founders Alliance members and Founders Alliance churches. They support us by praying for us and investing, by partnering with us, enabling us to produce content like this and make it available free to individuals and churches throughout the world.